The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Los Angeles City Council President pro tempore Marquise Harris-Dawson is a strong leader in the fight for unarmed traffic enforcement and digital equity in Los Angeles. His valuable perspectives on critical issues affecting Black families and communities across the country have placed him among those to watch in politics. Councilmember Harris-Dawson has been a vocal critic of pretextual stops, minor traffic violations used to investigate unrelated crimes, disproportionately affecting communities of color. Additionally, his work in bridging LA's digital divide, particularly for marginalized communities, is groundbreaking. His recent legislative efforts aim to amend a local ordinance focusing on preventing discrimination in consumer services. And he is our guest today. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Ja. All right, Mr. Harris-Dawson, welcome to the show, man. How you doing today?
It's good to be here, Ramses. I appreciate you all having us and eager to dig into it.
Absolutely. Well, we're excited to get this conversation going. So what we do on this show, first, before we get to the heavy stuff, is we'd like to know a little bit about who we're talking to. So give us a little bit about your background, just in brief. Where does your story start? Tell us about, you know, a little bit about growing up and really what led you to a career in politics.
So thank you for that. Born in Los Angeles, South Central Los Angeles, born before the crack epidemic. The crack epidemic happens as I'm growing up. Mm-hmm. Family moves out of the community or chooses housing outside the community to avoid both the police repression and the gang, and the drugs and the quality of schools, all of which were in deep decline, during the time I was growing up. And that experience really was the inflection point, I think, for my life, because from that moment on, I really wanted to see what I could do to confront the problems that made my family feel like they had to move away. Went on to Morehouse College, where, you know, you learn activism, Black activism writ large, and really world activism. And change making. And so got that experience, came back to LA, became a community organizer in the community, working on quality of schools, the physical quality of schools, also push out suspensions and expulsions, land use, like the overconcentration of liquor stores and other pawn shops and other negative land uses in the community. And eventually the community asked me to, you know, put my name in the hat to be represent them on the city council. And I did that. And I've been there for 9 years now.
Fantastic. One of the things before we continue on that I want to make sure that I mentioned to you is that a part of this effort, you know, on this show, we talk to folks all around the country, but famously, you know, our listeners know that I'm from Compton, California, and I was born in 82. Right. So I was coming up around the time when, you know, crack and gangs was really already very pronounced in my neighborhood, at least.
Right. That's right. That's
and
right.
So to know that that was kind of the nexus of your story is it's comforting to know that, you know, there's people to look to indeed for the changes that have taken place and the changes that we're hoping will take place. So continuing with that, that's a great segue. One of the things that you're known for, at least more recently, is this fight for unarmed traffic enforcement. So talk to us a little bit about what that is.
Well, you know, any Black person who lives in the United States, you live in a big cities, there's been different iterations of police reform movements. Mm-hmm. You know, here in Southern California, we had the Black Panther movement in the 60s and 70s. In the 80s, we had CAPA, Coalition Against Police Abuse. Folks might remember the names Michael Zinzan, Anthony Thigpen, Margaret Lee Thomas. And then now we have Black Lives Matter. And the Black Lives Matter movement has really created political space. Mm-hmm. So that you can raise questions that, frankly, politically, you could raise them before, but you couldn't have a serious conversation about them. Nobody would take you seriously. And so, you know, in the wake of LA having a very strong Black Lives Matter chapter and, you know, a racial reckoning that went on in this city in 2020, even though we're far away from Minneapolis, folks in LA could identify what happened there with what happened there and the police. And so a number of reforms came forward. The one that I decided to take the mantle of, and the one that I thought could make a big material difference in our community, was traffic stops. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about traffic stops, so many times when something goes wrong between the community and the police, it's at a traffic stop that has nothing to do with anything that should involve violence. Mm-hmm. Yet we send people with deadly weapons to do traffic stops. So it makes no sense. If I've got a broken taillight, that, you know, you don't need to bring a gun to that party. You need to either cite me for the broken taillight, or, wow, imagine this. If my taillight is really that dangerous, maybe you call a tow truck and somebody can go in there and change the bulb so that I can get on the rest of my way without endangering the traffic behind me. Sure. And there's so many other traffic stops that have nothing to do with public safety, nothing to do with violent crime, and do not need a deadly weapon introduced into the situation. And so we're trying to get LAPD to change their policy around traffic stops, in order to cut down on those types of interactions. And so so far the police department has done, you know, what I would consider a half or three quarter step. Okay. Now at least you're required on camera within 90 seconds of stopping someone to say, I stopped you for this reason. Okay. And then that allows me to say, oh, how many other people have you stopped for this reason? What was their race? What neighborhood were they in? And that actually has, that by itself has dropped the number of stops dramatically. But we think it ought not be legal. The other thing I'll just say parenthetically is we also don't get traffic enforcement. When we have this sort of stop and frisk traffic stops, you don't get traffic. You don't get traffic enforcement. So as a result, and not a lot of people know this, you're more likely to be killed in an automobile accident as a pedestrian, a bike rider, or a person in a car than you are by a gunshot in the city of LA. Mm-hmm. We lose more people and have more injury from traffic incidents than we do from gunfire. And you know how much of a problem guns are.
Yes.
In the community. And so on both counts, right? So like we get this specter of harassment. And then on the other hand, you don't get traffic enforcement. We can do both better. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something that I want to point out here. You know, on this show, recently we had a conversation about guns. And police often introducing guns and gun energy into an equation that otherwise would not warrant that, right? Just right. By them carrying a device whose only purpose is to end a life, by carrying that device on their person, right? Mm-hmm. And recently on this show, and this is kind of my thing. You know, I'm one of those people. 2020 happened and I was like, well, let me get off this radio station and get into the streets. And I've been here ever since, right? But again, recently on the show, we covered an instance. I think it took place in Florida, but I think it proves my point, where an officer had placed a young Black man in the backseat of a car over text messages that he sent. And as he was walking around his car, an acorn fell on the hood of the car and it startled the officer. He pulls out his gun, unloads the clip into the car. And then because his partner was across the street, sees what's happening, doesn't quite know what she's shooting at yet. She's asking while she's shooting, but she unloads a clip into the car as well. Fortunately, the young man was not hit by any of the bullets, but I think that this goes to show that when there is a gun and we have people who we've espoused in a certain way to where they're, you know, brave and courageous. And that's not to take anything away from them, because I know that there are instances where they can be brave, just like there are instances when all human beings can be brave. But just to paint with that broad of a stroke, it robs them of their humanity, which is indeed a range of emotions. And we are willing to forgive the police, especially communities where the police actions or inactions don't negatively affect outcomes for their communities, right? And so I appreciate and applaud this effort of yours, because you're absolutely right. Traffic stops that have nothing to do with what ends up turning deadly should not be so prominent, and they should not lead indeed to deadly outcomes and disproportionately so for folks that look like me and you. So I appreciate that. Let's shift gears a bit here, and you can piggyback off of that. But I want to ask, what are the steps to getting something like this passed? Because other people around the country may want to take up the mantle in their own communities as well.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, a couple things that we have in Los Angeles that are key that set the basis for us to even put this up as a motion. One is, we have a strong activist community that makes it so that, you know, now other elected officials don't automatically say, well, I support the police no matter what they do, kind of like you described. So now you have people, even people who represent communities where these type of activities don't cause negative outcomes, even they're asking like, hey, wait a minute, we need to take a look at this. Mm-hmm. So there's openness. The second thing is, years ago, because of activism, Los Angeles had a consent decree with the federal government because activists sued the police department for racism among and unconstitutional policing and other things. One of the conditions of that consent decree is it forced the LAPD to collect data by race and neighborhood. So as a result, we have really good data. So we know that even though Black people are only about 7 or 8% of the population, they're almost half of the people who get stopped by the police. When Black people get stopped by the police, and all of this we know and is public information because of that consent decree, most police departments don't have or collect this data, and you can understand why.
Sure.
What was found was when a Black driver was stopped, the amount of times that contraband and illegal weapon or the person was wanted for another crime was below 5%. When a white driver is stopped by LAPD, almost 40% of the time, that person has illegal drugs and illegal weapons wanted for another crime. So what that tells you is, when white people get it, it tells you a couple of things. One, white people are being profiled. Black people are just being stopped. Which are totally different things. And so we have that proof in front of us that this is the police department's own data. It's not like somebody else made it up and imposed it on them. This is coming out of their databases. And that gives us the moral basis to go to even people who support the police and say, hey, even if I take race and justice and equity out of it, it's just a waste of money and inefficient. And so you get to make that argument. And so what we've been able to do, what we have to do is anything big change like this, you have to do a study to identify what the potential impacts of it. Does it cost money? Will it save money? Will it increase public safety? Will it decrease public safety? So that study is just now coming to a close. Mm-hmm. That study will be put out in the city. Community groups will get to look at it and comment on it. And then that'll come back to the council. We'll have a discussion. And my hope is that we pass something, deliver it to Mayor Karen Bass, and she signs it.
Okay, fantastic.
The Black Information Network.
I think it's caused us really to focus on the equity and inclusion piece and not just the diversity piece.
Celebrating Black history.
Then.
The die is cast. As I said, we're not asking. We're saying this is the way it's going to be.
And now.
Making sure that
Yeah, that was a first, but it won't be the only time that that's happened. We want to make sure that we can continue to do new things.
Because our story continues.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BIN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BIN.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are here today with Los Angeles City Council President pro tempore, Marquis Harris Dawson. Now, I feel like you might have touched on it a bit, but I want to just kind of gauge the potential for something like this, not just in Los Angeles, but around the country. Has something like this been done before? And if so, what were the results of it?
You know, Philadelphia basically ended. They took a lot of categories out for police stops, and they've been at it for, I don't know, maybe a year and a half now.
Okay, yeah, I remember.
The results are still coming in, but it's not like there's been this big giant spike or drop in crime as a result of it. San Francisco did something similar as well, like just certain things or calls they don't respond to. Really, police respond to things that require a police officer or require somebody with a gun. And that seems to be going fine as well. LA is a little bit different. So other people are doing it, and we encourage other people to different. One thing I want to say about LA is the capital of car culture.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what stop and frisk is to New York City, traffic stops are to LA. Mm-hmm. So it's if you take away traffic stops, it's a major change in the way the police do business. You know, one police officer who, lots of police officers are supportive of this idea, but one police officer who's supportive of the idea is like, yeah, you know, now we're going to, if you do this, now we're going to have to do real police work. And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, for example, we don't look for burglars in LA. If you report a burglary, we come to your house, we may dust for fingerprints, we may take pictures. So when we go back to the station, that stuff goes into a file. We don't do, you know, we're not cross-referencing it and trying to connect that. So we're doing that. You said, you know what we do? I was like, what? He's like, we pull people over. And if we pull you over and you've got something in your trunk that looks like it might have been burglarized, and we ask you where you got it and you can't give a straight answer, then we go back to that file and pull out and see if we can get a match. And so he was like, that really is a dragnet way of policing, and not really an efficient way of policing, but it's what we do. And this policy change would force us to change that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that, because the truth of the matter is that shortcuts like that.
Yeah.
As we've established in this conversation and many times before on the show, and I'm sure many times throughout your career, disproportionately and negatively affects Black and brown people. And this is part of the reason why I believe that non-Black people historically have been able to excuse police misconduct, police overstepping their role.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that coupled with, you know, what I was referring to earlier, which is sort of this propaganda that has kind of influenced all of us, myself included, over many years since the show Dragnet. I believe that's where it actually started. In California. It has caused us all to kind of accept that the police are just doing their job, and we just turn our backs to it and let whatever happens happen until it affects us or someone like us. Right. And so, again,
we have this reverence for violence in the country. Right. So and this is, I think, particular to the U.S. It may exist in other parts of the world, but it's particular to the U.S. We don't ever question the military, and we don't question police.
Yeah.
So any other part of the government, we question it. Right. So if it's the trash pickup, we think the trash guy makes too much noise, or they come early and they could come late, or they make too much money, or their lunch breaks are too long. I mean, we get into the nitty gritty of it. Are you wasting $5 on this? And did you buy this other thing that you could have got for $25? Did you pay $27? We do that with every part of the government. Except policing.
Yeah. And we buy them tanks.
Right. They say they need a tank. We buy them two tanks. Right? Yep. Yeah, and you don't know how to use the other one? Fine. You'll get around to it. I mean, I'll just give you a data point that's particularly disturbing to me. And I voted for this, so I can't even criticize other people. The city of LA has a fleet of 18 helicopters. Mm. 18. There are countries in the world whose military don't have 18 helicopters. And no one has ever been called to counsel, you know, and put at that desk and grilled about, have you ever flown more than two helicopters at one time? What do you do with the helicopters? What are the helicopter rides for? Yeah. We just got a recent report that showed the majority of the rides on the helicopters were just transporting police personnel to non-emergency situations, where they just, you know, like the chief doesn't have an hour to sit in traffic to get to the valley, as an example. So they'll put him in a helicopter to take him there. And again, I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying, if this is the way we're going to examine the government, let's examine all of it, including police.
Sure, sure. And I think that that's fair. If I'm being very honest, there's a culture that, as you mentioned, like really blindly supports the police, and at the cost of almost everything else, at the exclusion of almost everything else.
That's right.
And I think that, you know, you helped make this point just now, but I'd have to go back and revisit it to make sure I'm articulating it properly. But my understanding is that if the police in this country were a military force, were a military, every police officer in every state, city, whatever, it would be the third largest military on earth.
Yeah, that's right.
That comes after China, and then the United States military, and then the police. And so the militarization of police departments around the country, indeed, after what war was that? What's the name of the war? Desert Storm and the early 90s, mid 90s wars in the Middle East. with all that equipment coming back and then repurposed for police use, and then the tactical gear and so forth. We've come a long way from the friendly neighborhood police officer, and the role of police has expanded to include more aggressive tactics, but indeed behaviors, and a more aggressive slash adversarial posturing with respect to the communities they are supposed to, quote, protect and serve. And so something like this that kind of reorients what policing should be.
That's right.
Could be, in terms of it being a public service to the community, is something that naturally I would applaud. And I'm sure lots of people around the country, and certainly the people in Southern California, would applaud.
And it would solve a big problem in this country. And that is, in this country, I don't know a Black community in the country where trust of the police department is high.
Say that.
I don't know one. Not Los Angeles, yeah. Not Cleveland, Ohio, not anywhere. Yeah. And part of what happens is these traffic stops are a big thing that undermine trust in the Black, in the Black community of police officers, because people believe, like, oh, you're out to get me. Mm-hmm. You're not out to protect me. Other communities, I think, have the feeling that, oh, these people are out to protect me from the bad guy.
Yeah,
and the thing is, if a community, and police will be the first ones to tell you this, in communities where there's not trust between the community and the police can never be successful in reducing crime. They just can't.
Facts.
And so I think it's I think, again, we're setting up a win-win scenario for everybody. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not one of these people that says abolish the police. I don't know of a civilized society in the world that doesn't have some form of policing. Mm-hmm. The question is, are we going to have policing that builds us up and that we can support and put our arms around? Or are we going to have policing that we have to keep at arm's length and be watchful and suspicious of all the time?
And another thing that, you know, for the folks listening, some of these things take a long time to take root for it to become our reality. Right. And so those people who are more afraid of the immediate growing pains than the long term effects, those are the people that often find themselves standing in the way of what ultimately ends up being progress. Right. So that's, I think it's important to say that. And, you know, although I spent a big part of my youth in considered privation, I ultimately grew up and was exposed to the real world. So I am indeed a Black man. And, you know, the only time, and I'm from Compton, the only time I've ever had a gun pulled on me is by the police.
Right.
Been handcuffed by the police, you know, been roughed up by the police. And the truth of the matter is I've never been arrested. And so why in the world would I have a relationship with this group of people that have treated me worse than the gangs I've been around, worse than the bullies and the, you know, so forth? In my story, my actual lived story, you know, the only people that have ever made me bleed my own blood have been police officers. And so and for no reason. They, you know, you fit the description of a suspicious, you know, individual or whatever their story is in order to get away with it. There's no accountability. And when all of a sudden they had, hey, did you see this car accident? You know, I didn't see nothing. Matter of fact, you know, I got my Stevie Wonder on. I don't have nothing to say. Right. And as you mentioned, a lot of folks around the country feel that way. So, so again, I think that is a very special thing. And, I'm excited to see what comes of it.
This concludes part one of our two-part conversation with Los Angeles City Council President pro tempore Marquise Harris Dawson. Check back in with us tomorrow for part two as we discuss digital equity in Southern California and why it's important, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you. And how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.